All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a case that I think you'll find pretty interesting, especially as a law student.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
It's SeaWorld v. Perez, and it really gets into this question of worker safety, but in like a really unusual setting.
Absolutely. We're talking about killer whales.
You know, when you think about OSHA, you don't usually picture theme parks, right?
Right. Usually you think about like construction sites or factories, the more sort of, quote, traditional workplaces.
Exactly. But this case is all about how OSHA's authority, specifically that general duty clause we've all heard about, applies to, well, trainers working with killer whales at SeaWorld.
I think it's a great example of how the law has to adapt to these kind of unique and sometimes, honestly, dangerous situations.
Yeah, and for our listeners out there who are in law school or thinking about a legal career, this case really forces you to think about, like, where's the line? You know, how far can OSHA go in regulating safety when you're dealing with these kind of inherent risks, like in a place like SeaWorld?
Exactly. And we've got some great material to work with today to really unpack all of this.
Yeah, we've got the court opinions, obviously, some background on the incident itself, and even some commentary on the broader implications for workplace safety. So our mission today is to break this all down in a way that's, you know, easy to digest, but also gets into some of those really meaty legal questions this case raises.
I'm ready to dive in.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. Back in February 2010, there was this, just awful incident at SeaWorld Orlando.
Yeah, the death of Dawn Brancho, a senior trainer at SeaWorld.
And she was killed by Tilikum, one of the orcas there, a killer whale.
Right, and Tilikum, I mean, he already had this history, unfortunately. He'd been involved in two other human deaths before this at different marine parks.
Which just goes to show, like, how inherently dangerous working with these animals can be. You know, no matter how much training or experience you have, these are still wild animals, incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. And SeaWorld did have some safety protocols in place, right?
Yeah, they did.
Like, for example, because of his past, they had this rule that trainers weren't supposed to get in the water with Tilikum. They called it water work.
Right. But obviously, something still went terribly wrong.
Yeah, and that's where OSHA comes in.
Right, because after the incident, OSHA cited SeaWorld for, I think it was a willful violation of the General Duty Clause.
Yep, that's right. It's part of the Occupational Safety and Health Act.
And that's essentially saying that SeaWorld, as an employer, you know, they knew or should have known that there was this hazard, this serious risk of their employees being injured or even killed by working with these killer whales.
Yeah, and I think that's like one of the trickiest parts of this whole case, right? Like,
yeah.
How do you define a recognized hazard when you're dealing with something like this?
Yeah.
Where the very nature of the job is working with these massive, powerful animals.
That's a great point. And on top of that, OSHA didn't just say, hey, you're doing something dangerous. They actually gave specific recommendations for what SeaWorld should do to fix it.
Like putting in physical barriers between the trainers and the whales?
Yeah, or having like a minimum safe distance that had to be maintained at all times during shows or training sessions.
It's interesting because right there, it starts to get into this idea of like what's feasible.
Yeah.
You know, how far can OSHA go in telling a company how to run its operations, especially when those operations are kind of unique and already have their own inherent risks?
That's a great point. And I think the court really wrestled with that, too.
Oh, absolutely. So before we get into what the appeals court ultimately decided, let's back up for a second and talk about how this case made its way up the legal ladder.
Right. Because this didn't just go straight to the D.C. Circuit, did it?
No. So first, it went to an administrative law judge, an ALJ, who actually sided with OSHA and upheld the citation against SeaWorld.
Okay.
And then SeaWorld tried to appeal that decision to the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission, but they declined to review it. So at that point, SeaWorld decided, all right, we're taking this to federal court. And that's how it landed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit.
And the big question before the court was whether or not that original citation from OSHA for violating the General Duty Clause was valid.
Right. And the court had to really dissect the General Duty Clause to figure that out. Like, what are the specific elements that have to be met to prove a violation?
Exactly. And I mean, for our listeners, this is kind of legal studies 101, but it's always good to refresh.
Yeah. So let's run through that four-part test real quick. The first part. Was there actually a hazard in SeaWorld's workplace?
Okay, that one seems kind of obvious, right?
I mean, yeah, you'd think so, but you always have to establish it. Then second, did SeaWorld, the employer, or the industry as a whole, recognize that hazard?
Okay, so that's where it gets a little stickier, I bet.
Right, and then third, Was that hazard likely to cause death or at least some serious physical harm?
And last but not least, were there any feasible means to get rid of the hazard or, you know, make it significantly less dangerous?
Bingo. You have to prove all four of those to say, yep, this is a violation of the general duty clause.
And the D.C. Circuit, in a 2-1 decision, ultimately said, yep, SeaWorld did violate the clause.
They sided with OSHA, yeah.
So let's break down why the majority, Judge Rogers, wrote the opinion, right?
Yeah, Judge Rogers.
Why they side with OSHA.
So I think one of the most interesting parts of the decision is how the court addressed that second part of the test, the whole did SeaWorld recognize the hazard thing.
Because, you know, SeaWorld's argument was basically, hey, we're experts in this field. We know how to work with killer whales.
Right. And they tried to downplay the risk, saying, look, these are isolated incidents. You can't predict when an animal might behave unpredictably.
But the court wasn't buying it, were they?
Not at all. And this is where I think it gets really interesting for anyone thinking about, like, the implications for businesses in general. The court really honed in on SeaWorld's own internal documents.
Oh, like what kinds of?
Well, things like their own safety protocols, training manuals, even those incident reports they kept. The court said all of those showed that SeaWorld absolutely knew or should have known that there was this serious risk of trainers being hurt or killed by working so closely with the killer whales.
So it's like their own paperwork came back to bite them.
Basically, yeah.
Huh.
Judge Rogers even wrote in the opinion that it was, quote, difficult to reconcile SeaWorld's claims of being unaware of the hazard with all this evidence from their own internal documents.
Yeah, that's pretty damning. It's a good reminder that, like, what you write down matters, especially when it comes to safety procedures.
Yeah, documentation is key. And the court wasn't just focused on those internal documents. They also looked at the history of incidents involving killer whales and humans, not just at SeaWorld, but at other parks too.
So they were building this, like, bigger picture of the risks involved.
Exactly. They said, look, this isn't just a SeaWorld problem. This is an industry-wide issue. These animals are powerful and unpredictable, and people have been hurt and killed before.
Okay, so that pretty much establishes that there was a recognized hazard. What about the last part of that test, the whole feasibility thing?
Well, here's where SeaWorld's actions after the incident actually worked against them.
How so?
Remember how OSHA suggested they could install barriers or require minimum safe distances?
Yeah.
Well, after Don Brancheau's death, SeaWorld did implement some of those changes. They started using those barriers and keeping trainers further away from the whales during performances.
Oh, so the court was like, well, if you could do it after, it was clearly feasible to do it before.
Exactly. It's pretty hard to argue that something's not feasible when you've already gone and done it.
Right. That makes sense. But SeaWorld still tried to fight back, didn't they? They had some defenses they threw out there.
Yeah, they did. One of their big arguments was that OSHA was overstepping its bounds, that they were basically trying to tell SeaWorld how to run its shows.
Like trying to dictate the entertainment aspect of it.
Right. They said that the close interactions between trainers and the whales were a crucial part of their shows, that it was what people came to see.
So they were saying OSHA was infringing on their, like, artistic freedom or something?
Kind of, yeah. But the court shot that down pretty quickly. They said OSHA's job is to make sure workers are safe, not to tell companies what their show should look like.
Makes sense.
As long as the regulations are focused on protecting employees from known hazards, they're generally in the clear.
Okay, so that's one defense down. What was their other big argument?
Well, they kept coming back to this idea that killer whales are inherently unpredictable.
Right, that you can't always know how they're going to behave.
And they used that to try and argue that the risks just weren't a recognized hazard in the way that OSHA was claiming.
Like, because you can't predict it, you can't really prevent it.
Exactly. But again, the court wasn't swayed. They pointed back to all those internal documents, the ones where SeaWorld was acknowledging the specific risks of working with killer whales and outlining their own procedures for minimizing those risks.
So to the court, that showed that SeaWorld knew the danger was there, even if they couldn't say exactly when or how an incident might happen.
Right. And that's important for anyone working in, like, risk management or safety, right? You don't have to be able to predict the future to recognize that a hazard exists.
Totally. Okay, so we've covered the majority opinion, but there was a dissent in this case, right?
Yep. Judge Kavanaugh disagreed with the majority.
Okay, and he had some pretty strong opinions about this, if I remember correctly.
He did. His dissent is really interesting, especially if you're interested in the limits of regulatory power.
Mm.
He argued that OSHA was basically overreaching in this case.
Oh, like how so?
He leaned heavily on this idea called the Pelron Principle. It comes from an older case back in 1974. And it essentially says that OSHA shouldn't be interfering with safety practices that are already well established in an industry or trying to regulate those inherent risks that are just part of doing business in that field.
So, like, applying that to SeaWorld, he was saying that OSHA shouldn't be telling them how to handle the risks of working with killer whales because that's just part of the business.
Right. He argued that OSHA was stepping on the toes of the entertainment industry and that Congress never intended to give them the power to dictate how these kinds of shows should be run.
And he made some pretty colorful comparisons to make his point.
He did. He compared the risks SeaWorld trainers faced to, like, NFL football players getting tackled.
Or race car drivers, right, like NASCAR, where there's always a chance of a crash.
Yeah, exactly. And his point was that these are all dangerous activities, but no one expects OSHA to come in and tell the NFL how to play football or NASCAR how to run its races.
So he was saying it was arbitrary for OSHA to target SeaWorld when there are all these other industries with inherent risks.
That's right. And he argued that this decision could set a dangerous precedent, basically giving OSHA the power to come in and regulate all sorts of industries that have always managed their own risks.
That's a really interesting argument, especially for someone going into law. Like, where do you draw the line? When does OSHA's authority to protect workers start to infringe on the freedom of businesses to operate?
Yeah, and it's not just about freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also about expertise. Kavanaugh argued that industries like SeaWorld are in a better position to understand and manage the specific risks of their own work than a government agency.
Okay, so we've got this clash between ensuring worker safety, which is obviously super important, and respecting the way businesses operate, especially when they involve these kinds of inherent risks.
It's a tough balance, and that's what makes this case so fascinating.
Right, and it's not just an academic question either. Like, this case has real-world implications.
Big time. I mean, think about it. This decision could potentially expand OSHA's reach into all sorts of industries that might not have been traditionally thought of as high-risk workplaces.
Like, what kind of places are we talking about?
Well, we've already mentioned sports, but think about things like stunt work in the movie industry, or maybe even like wilderness guiding or adventure tourism. There are all sorts of jobs where there's a certain level of inherent risk involved. And this case could give OSHA more leverage to step in and regulate those industries, even if the risks are arguably part of the job.
That's a big shift.
Yeah, and it's not just about which industries OSHA might try to regulate. It's also about how courts are going to define a recognized hazard going forward. If SeaWorld's own internal documents can be used against them like this, it could make companies a lot more hesitant to be really upfront about the risks they face.
Because anything they write down could potentially be used to show that they recognized a hazard.
Right, and that could lead to a situation where companies are less transparent about risks, which could actually make workplaces less safe in the long run. It's a really tricky issue.
It is, and there's one last thing I wanted to touch on. The court made a point of saying that the changes SeaWorld made after the incident, the barriers and stuff, that those didn't fundamentally alter their business.
Oh, that's a really important point. They were basically saying that SeaWorld could still put on their killer whale shows, still make money, even with those safety measures in place.
Right, so their argument wasn't that OSHA was putting them out of business?
Exactly. It was more about, like, who gets to decide how much risk is acceptable and whether OSHA should have that power when it comes to, well, the entertainment value of a show.
So I think we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today.
I think so, too.
This case is full of those big gray areas that we often see in law.
Yeah. And it's not just about the legal arguments. It's about, like, those bigger philosophical questions, too.
Exactly. You know, what's the right balance between protecting workers and letting businesses operate freely? How much risk is okay? And who gets to make that call?
And for those of you listening who are, you know, future lawyers, judges, policymakers, these are the kinds of questions you're going to be grappling with throughout your careers.
Yeah. And SeaWorld v. Perez is a great example of how a case about killer whales can actually raise some of the most fundamental questions about our legal system and how we balance competing interests in a complex society.
Exactly. Like, do you agree with the majority's decision? Or do you side more with Judge Kavanaugh's dissent? And what are the strongest arguments for your position? It's a case that really makes you think.
It does. And that's what we're all about here on The Deep Dive. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.